Podle jeho plánu postavili v holandském Herhugovardu čtvrť se 3000 domácnostmi, která si veškerou elektřinu vyrábí sama. Nizozemský urbanista indického původu Ashok Balotra. Welcome to DVTV.
Thank you.
So you created a blueprint for a town that would make the most of the sun. Is it the first of its kind in the world?
Yeah, it is I'm proud to say that it's the biggest housing project with zero carbon footprint in the world. But at the same time, I'm a bit sad and disappointed in the world because it's not such a big project. It's only 4,000 houses. So there should have been much bigger projects than this one. And I think it's important to go on with these ideas and make bigger projects. So on the one hand, I'm proud. On the other hand, I'm a bit angry.
We're going to get to that. Now, how difficult was it for architects to incorporate solar technology in their designs? In other words, what mistakes did they make, if they made some?
No, it's not difficult at all, because it's like sewage, electricity, water, cable television, everything we have in houses. So plugging in the solar panels is the simplest thing one can think of. It's only that the politicians, the decision makers, should not fear to do something else than normally. And this is what happened in this project, in the City of the Sun, that the politicians, the mayors, and the aldermen, and the bureaucrats, and the developer, they joined hands together to make it a success.
Mm-hmm. But in his book, Photovoltaics in the Urban Environment, Lessons Learned from Large-Scale Projects, Bruno Gaiden writes about the City of the Sun, and among other things he writes that lack of knowledge about photovoltaics resulted several times in designs that were unsuitable for this orientation, structure and shading. So he is implying that there was at least a lack of knowledge, a basic one.
No, there was, you know, because it's the discussion was always not the perfection, because there is, I believe, the truth, the common denominator of truth is change. So if you do according to the best possible orientation and the best slope for the panels, the best, mm-hmm. then you will get a city very dogmatic. So my thing was, even 5 to 10% deviation in terms of excellence, the best, there's nothing wrong if it gives the cultural dimension, if the architecture becomes also interesting, if the people are also like it also. But there was not lack of knowledge, I think. I think it was more maybe sometimes it slipped out of their fingers, you know. That's but the knowledge was very easy.
Well, one of the ambitions of this project was to build a town that would be 100% carbon-free, carbon-neutral. You said it worked out, so tell us how it works, because the City of the Sun, as you like to call it, or as it is known in English, is connected somehow to the grid, or because as far as I know, storing renewable energy remains a problem. So how do you overcome
this? Yeah, it's you know, the concept started very, very simple. I made a little sketch on the meeting of the three towns together, where they meet together. There used to be a very big lake. Now it was agricultural land, it was polder. So I imagined myself going back to the history, the lake, and I put some islands in that lake. And one of the biggest islands is the Square Island. It is oriented exactly north-south, so that the best orientation you can think of. When I presented that project, this is to give you some idea, the first time, the concept in 92, with a little drawing, and I said, this is going to be the solar city. And one of the mayors of one of the towns, the three towns together, and he said, can I ask you something? I said, have you been to India the last time? And I was a bit perplexed during my presentation. And they said, okay, you know what, in Holland, it's always raining, it's gray, and you're talking about sun and solar energy. I think you got a sunstroke in India. So immediately I said, you know, Mr. Mayor, on way to this meeting, I was hit by a windmill. I forgot to tell you, we should also have wind power. So windmill. So everybody started laughing. And that was the birth of this concept of this project, because after that, everyone did, you know, questioned only how to build it instead of why. And that's, you know, again, it was the coincidence of things together which came. And then our idea was 70%. Our target was 70% will be
carbon
neutral. But it's now almost 100%. And now almost it is 100% carbon neutral. Because we had, you know, I was convinced that we should not force things. We should not become dogmatic. We should not become utopians. Because human beings, we have also, you know, the darker sides.
So speaking of darker sides, can a blackout happen in the City of the Sun?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Oh, I didn't ask if it happened, but if it may, can you exclude?
No, because it is connected to the grid. It is connected to the grid, because you can't just have solar energy, because the production of solar energy is in the summer, the top, and in the winter it goes down. So you need the grid to get the electricity, and that's why we have three windmills also. So altogether is about 10 megawatts, which is enough for thousands of houses. So on that grid, on the sustainable grid, there are almost 4,000 houses, now 3,750. And when they produce more energy, through solar energy, they can sell it back to the grid, and they buy it back from the grid. So that was one of the most important contracts between the energy company and the inhabitants, was that energy company was obliged to buy back from the grid. And that's what makes it a success, and that's what I think would not end up in blackouts.
What would you do if it does?
Wow, we can always have candles.
Okay, what's your approach to cars? Do you want people to ride on horses, or are cars allowed in the City of the Sun, or to what extent?
No, I am...
Speaking of candles, I just thought about horses.
No, because it's, you know, that's what Henry Ford said. If you ask people, they needed faster horses instead of cars. So it's important that evolution takes place, and electric cars, small cars, maybe some one day they'll be on the street grids automatically. You know, the things are happening. And the nice thing about our cities, especially if the cities with streets and squares, and not abstract cities with green and just buildings in it, every new innovation can be used there. So look at our old cities. You know, everything is you know, they were built in the medieval time. But still, everything is there. So, my idea of energy sustainability is not only material sustainability, but also social sustainability, cultural sustainability, economical sustainability. Because if those other three pilars of sustainability are there, then it's just sustainable. And the second thing I still question every time is sustainable enough. Imagine, you know, if somebody asks you, how's your marriage going on? Oh, it's sustainable. Well, you have a problem, because that's not enough. There should be more. There should be passion. There should be love. There should be, confidence, trust, and all kinds of other factors. So that's also for inhabitants in the city. So it is not enough to have buildings which are sustainable, but the society should be sustainable.
The town is built in a coastal area. You've spoken of the lake. So how do you deal with the potential flooding, or how did you?
Oh, that's one of the basic things, because my idea was one-third urbanization, one-third water to get the buffer, so there's no floods, and one-third ecology and forestation. So the whole idea was, so now we have 125 hectares of urban area, and we have 75 hectares of water, and we have 125 hectares of forest. So that helps a lot. And then the water purification, we have all kinds of beautiful wells around, dug in, so that the water gets purified and goes back to the main lake. And the landscape of that, which is very technical thing, you know, so circles, and you can walk around them, and you see the water going down, you know, like a whirl thing, you know, a whirlpool, and then it goes back to the main lake. So the whole idea is to have a buffer for water, for us is very important because it's a boulder. So if there is too much rain, and it's going to be more rain in the future, so that the water can be stored for the time being. And that's what we have done here also. And water is also recreation. So we have a beautiful beach, sand beach on the water. And the whole island, which is a square island in the middle, the small islands around it, the square island, the water front of the square island is a public space. So we did not want to privatize it, because the developer, of course, would love to have sell a big house with a garden on the water. So we said, no, it has to be. So there again, the social, cultural sustainability. And for me, it was the most important that the future residents love the city where they live in.
Well, listening to you, it sounds like this is really a life mission to you, like something that you were even maybe born as an idea, maybe from, I don't know, early stages of your life. Or when did this first occur to you that you would build such a town that you would then be so passionate to speak about?
1968.
And why did it take so long?
That's a big, that's a good question. Because in 1968, I worked with an architect's office in Paris, who were invited for the Triennale in Milan in August 68. And the whole theme of the Triennale was growing numbers, the population explosion, that in 25 years there'll be twice as many people on the earth, you know. So what is our responsibility as architects, planners? What can we contribute? So during that research work, I was astonished that we didn't know a thing. I didn't know a thing. And then I found out that environment is not only whether you're doing the right thing or wrong thing, it's a matter of life and death for people. So it is not just simple. Today in India, for example, because of the droughts, shortage of water, you know, every day there are 30 farmers committing suicide. We don't understand that. It's not only the nice thing to do, but it is also, you're talking about a very great impact on the life of people. Syrian war, you know, where is the origin of that thing? Drafts in Syria. People started moving. There came a revolt. And so we're going to see that most of the refugees now and in the future will be climate refugees. And we have to be very, very sure about that. So, of course, we make mistakes, even with the best project, with the best thing. But if you don't do anything, you don't make mistakes.
Well, what you're saying sounds so convincing that I must ask, why do so many developers build the old way? Because from what you're describing, it sounds like this is actually the only option, the only solution. So if you would try understanding the other side, why do so many projects work on the old principles of building?
It's very simple, because people in general are scared of something new, something different. Whether it's different way of planning, different way of architecture, different cultures, people are scared of the unknown. And there is a beautiful song of Björk, says, "I feel at home whenever I'm among the unknown." And that is for me, so close to me, because the unknown is the window to knowledge and to wisdom. And the basic things for the developers and the politicians, if you see the fear of populism is taking place everywhere in the world, especially in Europe and America. The developers think they will take risk if they do this. I had discussions with the developer of this project. He owned the land. As an individual, he didn't want to be to do the project. So he told the city, "I don't want to do it with him because he's an idealist." Mm. So the city told me, "You know, we have a problem. He owns the land. He doesn't want to sell the land. So what do we do?" I said, "Well, I'll go and talk to him."
So then the government and the EU are idealists too, because the City of the Sun was funded thanks to their support? Or do you think that you would have managed to build it without it?
No, I think it's a very important incentive to have from the EU, the 10 million support, because that is a sort of kickstart for the project, because it convinced the developer that they're not taking too many risks. Because it was a project subsidy. And the project subsidy, and then at a certain moment, they wanted to change it into an individual subsidy. Then I fought with the government, with the minister, said, don't do that because the whole project will be stopped. And so, but it needs a lot of conviction. It needs a lot of strength to go on with this kind of project.
Do you know about any commercial projects of the same kind that would be built somewhere?
Yeah, but the thing is that City of the Sun now is a big successful commercial project. I was I'm amazed because the sustainability, the scenarios for the economic thing is to invest in sustainability because that's the best business case we can think of.
So what I was asking was whether this inspired maybe some other commercial projects somewhere. Do you know of any?
Yeah, on small scale, yes.
Just small scales.
But not on big scales. On the scale of the buildings, 10,000 square meters or 5,000 square meters, there's a lot of projects and there are a lot of things happening there.
You often work on projects in China. Do you see interest in this sort of green urban planning there?
Oh yes, I've done three cities there and they're based on green urban planning. And the only project which was inspired, but literally from the City of the Sun, is in Wuhan, is under construction. The mayor was there with me and the City of the Sun, and he looked at the project and said, I want this also in my town.
As an urbanist, I cannot not ask you what your thoughts about Prague as a city are. What are your thoughts on Prague as a city from an urbanistic point of view? Because we are doing this interview in Prague, in the Czech Republic.
Oh, Prague,
so
okay.
I wanted to have your view on our city, on our capital.
I love Prague. It's a beautiful city.
Everyone does, but how do you see it from this green perspective, sustainable?
Yeah, but it's very easy. You can transform the existing city into a green city. It's a simple things.
How much time would it take for Prague to be totally carbon neutral, for example?
It depends on the politicians. I just had it in the meeting. We had there was the deputy mayor of the city next to Prague. I forget the name.
Brno. Well, it's not really next to Prague, but in Indian or Asian scales,
it's next to Vienna, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. and then there was a discussion about public transportation. And he said, you know, we were working on this and to have ticket system and this and that, so that people don't they pay for their travel. So I said, you know, in Brasilia, in Curitiba, 20 years, 15 years back, the mayor decided, Jamie Lerner, the ticket of the public transportation was also a ticket of the lottery. So people bought that. Hmm. And the public transportation, for example, should be free. Because then he said, we have to be step by step. No, we have to take some right and bigger steps immediately. So, for example, here, public transportation, more intensive and free. And actually, there should be more places where people can stop the public transport and get into it.
So that would be the ideal city from your point of view?
Absolutely. And bicycle lanes, more space for the pedestrians, and less space for the cars.
Ashok Balotra, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.